now for highlights of the symposium, during which I showed segments of video interviews with a treating oncologist, and we also showed some home photos and videos of the patients to humanize the discussion. To begin, Dr. Bill Harwin of Naples, Florida, presents a challenging situation. A 75-year-old man with a very active lifestyle but a history of chronic bronchiectasis and MGUS, who presented with anemia, an M spike, and an osteolytic lesion, which was confirmed on biopsy to be a plasmacytoma, and a bone marrow with a T1114 translocation. The patient was seen by a transplant center and considered not a good candidate, based mainly on the bronchiectasis, and the patient was treated with lenalidomide and dexamethasone for 6 courses, followed by lenalidomide maintenance along with zoledronic acid. He did very well, but required antibiotics several times related to acute infection from bronchiectasis. Dr. Harwin began by describing the patient.
He's very upbeat, so he never is depressed. He's always in a good mood. He's concerned about his care and certainly wants to be informed. He usually comes by himself. He's biologically 5 to 10 years younger than his chronological age. He's just very fit. He just doesn't look sick. He looks like an active person.
Any questions for the faculty?
I guess the question is, what are the medical contraindications to transplant, particularly in a patient who's in the mid-70s? And how strongly should we push towards transplant, given the advances in non-transplant therapy in the last few years? It seems a little muddier now, the issue, than it was a few years ago.
Any other questions?
When we have new patients, while we're waiting for the data to come in, such as the cytogenetics and FISH studies, how critical is it to wait before making a treatment start decision? Or do some experts recommend starting with 2 of the 3 drugs and then adding a 3rd drug if the patient has poor prognostic factors? Would the experts have started the patient on a different regimen than lenalidomide and dexamethasone, such as bortezomib, or would they have used a 3-drug regimen from the beginning of initiation of therapy? Another question, in a patient like this who's getting zoledronate for a long period of time, you know, what point do we cut down from monthly to every 3 months? Is there ever an end for zoledronate in patients who have no progression, have their bone disease controlled, and have no bone pain? Can we ever just stop it?
I just want to take a deep breath and start with Mari. And just your thoughts in general about transplant nowadays in general. What about in a 75-year-old man? You can see very active, a healthy lifestyle. Are there 75-year-old men? What about the bronchiectasis? It sounded, from what Bill told me, it was the bronchiectasis that really got the transplanters concerned. How do you think this through, Mari?
I think for particularly fit patients like this, I wouldn't take it off the table simply because of his biologic age. Currently, the duration of severe neutropenia during transplant runs about 7 days. For patients transplanted in first plateau, we're experiencing a treatment-related mortality rate of 0.5%. And when we looked at those patients over the age of 65 that we transplanted, that we selected for transplantation, survival was no different than in younger patients. Now, clearly, we don't select as high a percentage of over 65 as we do under 65, but if we feel they're fit, we feel very comfortable in transplanting them. And again, with all the data on the use of novel agent induction, it's still clear that stem cell transplant will increase the depth of the response, complete response or very good partial response, by an additional 20% from about the mid-40s to the mid-60s. So I'd have a pretty serious discussion. I certainly wouldn't dismiss it as a concept based on age alone.
Bill, what specifically about the issue of bronchiectasis? I don't know if you've seen any patients who had bronchiectasis, you know, like this, an older patient. Have you had any patients who went through transplant who had bronchiectasis?
Well, I've certainly had patients with chronic lung disease, more often COPD rather than just bronchiectasis. And there's no question these patients have more problems with recurrent pulmonary infections. I can recall a particular patient who was actually quite young, about 58, but he was a heavy smoker, had pretty severe COPD, and we treated him with a 3-drug induction regimen, got a great response, but he had recurrent episodes of decompensation from his COPD that included several infections and actually wound up twice in the ICU on ventilators. And this is without a transplant. So in this patient in particular, we did not elect to offer him a transplant as an option.
And again, getting back to you, Maury, as Dr. Harwin verbalized, I mean, what about transplant today compared to transplant 5 or 10 years ago before we had these novel agents? You could hear in his questioning, you know, sort of the indecision about whether you really need to do transplant.
I think the key message is that transplant is a regimen. It should not be considered the platform on which all myeloma therapy is based. But just as we have 2-drug inductions and 3-drug regimens, we have consolidation and maintenance regimens, stem cell transplant is a regimen. What's controversial is whether it's required to do the transplant up front to get the maximization of survival compared with keeping it as a salvage treatment. That is not an answered question. But I like to have transplant available as an option, and I certainly do not think it's rendered obsolete by the presence of the novel agents we have available.
So we actually asked the audience, Maury, about this patient or this case on terms of transplant, and 70% said no. About a third of the audience would consider it. What do you think about transplanting this patient, Maury?
I answered maybe when I did the survey, and it was because, you know, you have to really understand the severity of the bronchiectasis, but I have to tell you, I'm very impressed if the patient comes to the office appointment and is a little bit upset because the appointment interferes with 18 holes of golf. That makes me think this is a very, very fit patient, and I certainly wouldn't exclude, and the way we do our transplants, I'm not even sure this patient would require hospitalization.
And that really is going to be a theme tonight, an important theme, which is the management of the older patients. There's so many patients in practice, particularly over age 80. And is age really just a number? I mean, again, just real quick, Maury, you mentioned your series there. What was the age of the oldest patient who got transplanted?
76, but we do it older in lymphoma patients because those are patients that we can cure. Since myeloma, we don't consider it curative. We keep that age range a little bit lower.
Ravi, what about the issue of bisphosphonates and the recently reported MRC study showing a survival advantage of zoledronic acid over cladrinate? What do you think it means and what do you think is going on?
Well, I think it is certainly very intriguing. It was a very large trial. The patients were treated in a somewhat heterogeneous manner, but I think the bar lies in the numbers, close to 2,000 patients, and they did show that independent of skeletal-related events, there was an improvement in survival. However, I think that the ASCO guidelines currently state that we should give bisphosphonates for 2 years and then stop if the disease is inactive, and that is based on the possibility for side effects like osteonecrosis of the jaw and renal effects on long-term administration. In this trial, one of the things that came across for the first time was probably that the rates of osteonecrosis of the jaw are about midway where people have reported them. Some have said as low as 1%, some have said as high as 10. I think here it was closer to the 3 to 5% range. So I think there's still a dilemma. I think that I personally still follow the ASCO guidelines. One would like to see the manuscript in full form before altering practice, I think.
Let's finish out with the other question, which is, in general, what's the most common induction regimen that you utilize in patients not eligible for transplant? Bill?
Well, I think that the data support the use of MPT or MPV. I do think there's good data in older patients with RD for induction as well. The other trials are simply less utilized in older patients, the other regimens, and I don't think we have enough data yet. MPR is one in particular in which there's been a trial in which it was 3 arms. It was MP, MPR, and MPR plus R. And it appears that the winner of that trial is MPR plus R. But the interesting thing about that trial was that MPR without a maintenance therapy was no better than MP.
Maury, what's your experience with RD in older patients?
Well, I was a heavy participant in the original RD trial. And again, as Bill mentioned, the median age was 66. So half of those patients would be considered, quote, elderly and not potentially candidates for stem cell transplant. The DVT is a real problem with these patients. I mean, the thrombosis is very difficult to eliminate. Nonetheless, when patients have an all-oral regimen and they're able to come once every 4 weeks for a recheck, that really feeds their need to maintain a good quality of life.